سماحة السيد الوالد، my respected brothers and sisters، السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الخلق أجمعين، سيدنا وحبيب قلوبنا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد. وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين. قال الله تعالى في محكم كتابه الكريم، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم، ويوم يعض الظالم على يديه يقول يا ليتني اتخذت مع الرسول سبيلا، يا ويلتى ليتني لم أتخذ فلانا خليلا، لقد أضلني عن الذكر بعد إذ جاءني، وكان الشيطان للإنسان خذولا. And on that day, the wrongdoer will bite his hands, saying, had I accompanied the messenger's way? Oh, woe unto me, had I not taken so-and-so for a friend. He indeed caused me to go astray from the reminder after its having come to me. And Satan is a forsaker of man. آمنا بالله صدق الله العلي العظيم. The tallest mountain on earth is Mount Everest. And we're told that its peak reaches a little over 29,000 feet. Now, to put this into perspective, for those of you who travel often, you'll probably have noticed that the regular or average cruising altitude of a commercial jet, an airline, is about 30,000 feet. So the average cruising altitude of a jet flies at about the height of Mount Everest. And because it's the tallest mountain in the world, it often attracts many highly experienced and passionate mountaineers and climbers. Many have attempted to climb, to ascend to the peak, to the summit of Mount Everest. Among those who has attempted to do so and has done so successfully is a man by the name of Edward Bear Grylls. His bear is the nickname. It's Bear Grylls. You may have heard of his name or seen him. He was the host of the popular show Man vs. Wild, for those of you who are into shows about nature and wildlife. And back in 1998, 20 years ago, Bear successfully climbed. He reached the summit of Mount Everest, and at the time he was one of the youngest people to do so at the age of 23. Now, for those of you who may have a little bit of background information about Mount Everest, you'll know that throughout this whole mountain, from the base all the way to the peak, it's one of the most difficult mountains to ascend. And this is because of the extreme, not just terrain and geography, but also because of the extreme weather in that region. We are told that often the temperatures are below, they are sub-zero, they are below zero, they are extreme, and that the winds can reach up to 200 miles an hour. And if you couple this with, of course, the lack of oxygen as you go up in your altitude, and the risk of avalanches and other difficulties, we'll know and we'll recognize that it is a risky situation. And many, in fact, have died in attempting to climb Mount Everest. And in an interview with Bear Grylls himself, I read the interview, he himself actually says that in one of his attempts, that he almost died. He was hanging unconscious from a rope. And he almost died. But he was able to successfully climb the world's tallest mountain. Now, he says in the interview that to attempt to ascend this mountain, to climb this mountain, without the aid of a guide, and in that region, they are known as Sherpas, the guides, who are familiar with the geography, they're familiar with the terrain, they're familiar with the weather conditions, that to attempt to climb the mountain without these guides, without the assistance of these guides, is virtually impossible. And so many of these experienced, even the most experienced mountaineers and climbers, they depend on these guides. They put their entire trust in these guides. They attach ropes to them, and they help them navigate, and they follow all of their directions and guidelines. In our lives, brothers and sisters, one of the very important factors that allows us to face and overcome the challenges that we face, the major challenges that we face in our lives, one of the major factors is our individual capabilities, our individual willingness and strength and determination to overcome our challenges. This is very important. If we don't have personal willpower and determination, we're not capable of overcoming our challenges. But also, and perhaps equally important, is not our own determination and willpower and capability and action, but also the quality and character of those who we surround ourselves with. Especially when it comes to our friends and those whom we consider to be the closest individuals to us. Our friends can either make us or break us. And we can also either make or break our friends. I read a story a while ago about a young man, a freshman in high school, who was walking back home from school one Friday afternoon. And he says that I was walking back home from school, and I noticed on the other side of the road, there was also a young man, also another student, walking back from school, carrying a lot of books in his hands. And as he's walking, this kid is walking across the street, suddenly a group of young men, they came by. As they passed by, they pushed him, they shoved him, his books fell, and this poor kid fell to the ground. You know, his glasses flew off, and he was in a miserable state, you know, trying to look for his glasses. He says, when I saw this, I felt terrible. This poor kid is just walking down the street, and, you know, these kids decided they wanted to bully him and bother him. So he says, I ran across the street. I went up to him, and as this kid was crawling, looking for his glasses, trying to gather his things, I knelt down, I picked up his glasses, and I gave them to him. And he put them on and he looked at me and he smiled. He had this huge smile on his face and he said, thank you. So he says, the boy says, I gathered his books, I helped him, and I helped him up. And then I turned to him jokingly and I said to him, why is it that you're carrying all of your books? You know, are you that, you know, that much of a nerd? You're taking all of your books? I mean, it's a Friday. Who takes all of their books home on a Friday afternoon? So he says, we began to walk, and I started to ask him. I said, you know, I've never seen you. And the boy said, yeah, I'm new. I just moved from another town, and I'm new to this city, and I'm new to this school. And so we began to talk as we walked, And then I told him, you know, a bunch of friends and I were getting together this weekend. We're going to play some video games. We're going to play some sports. Would you like to accompany us? You want to come by? He says, yes. The boy was very excited. Absolutely. So he says that over this weekend, we really got to know him. My friends and I, we got to know him. And he turned out to be a really nice guy. He was very quiet and calm, but a very nice guy. And he says, you know, the weeks and the months passed by and the years, and we became very, very close friends. And during our senior year, as we were filling out applications, you know, for college, we decided that we wanted to sort of go to school together, continue, but we got accepted to different schools, but we decided that we would still maintain our relationship. We would still be close. And my friend ended up being the valedictorian of the class, of our, you know, senior class. And so when graduation came close, he was supposed to give a speech. And so he says, you know, I encouraged him. He was nervous. I encouraged him. And then he went and he stood up in front of the entire class, in front of the entire audience, and he began to speak. And as he began his speech, he said, you know what, many times in these kinds of speeches, we're expected to thank those who supported us. And I want to especially thank one person, and that is my friend, and he named him, my friend so-and-so. And he began to relay the story of the first time they met in the street. And he says, I never told anyone this, but on that day, on that Friday afternoon, I had cleaned out my locker. I was taking everything back home with me because I decided that that weekend I would take my life. I was going to take my own life. And so I cleaned out my locker because I didn't want my mother to have to come to school and pick up my things. But during that moment, of hopelessness, he came to me. I saw someone who came to me and he extended his hand and he showed me kindness and generosity and he showed me the true meaning of friendship. And so he gave me the willpower to continue going. Our friends can make us or break us. And we can make them or break them. And as such, we find that our teachings, they emphasize the importance of choosing our friends wisely and being extremely cautious with the people who we consider to be our friends, those who we allow into our lives, those who we share intimate moments with, those who we share our, you know, deepest secrets with, and our life with. In our day-to-day lives, we know that in many aspects of our lives, we're very, very cautious when it comes to certain things. None of us would ever go when attempting to purchase a home. None of us would ever, from the first day we go to the open house, we see the house. We might like the house, apparently. We like, you know, things about it. But none of us would ever sign the contract right there and then and purchase the house until we do what? Until we inspect the house. Until we ensure that the foundation and everything within the house is safe. Because we're planning on living here. We're planning on spending our time here. We want to ensure that this place is safe for us and our families and our friends and those who would occupy this place. If I'm going out to buy a car, I would never go to the lot immediately and purchase the car. I could have done my homework about the car, you know, but before reading about the safety standards or the safety ratings of the car, and before actually test driving the car itself to see how it drives, I would never purchase the car. I want to ensure that it's safe and it's reliable. If I go to the supermarket and I want to purchase food, I don't just purchase anything. I ensure that the products that I purchase, the ingredients that are in the food, are safe, they're okay. And in the same manner, it's important for me that those who I open my heart to, my mind to, and my life to, that I ensure that they are good for me, not just my physical well-being, but also my spiritual, my intellectual, my emotional, my psychological well-being. And so it's important to be extremely cautious. The Quran tells us about people who will regret some of their friendships. They will regret their friendships. Allah tells us, الْأَخِلَّاءُ يَوْمَئِذٍ بَعْضُهُمْ لِبَعْضٍ عَدُوٍ. On that day, the day of judgment, friends will be enemies to one another. Friends will be enemies to one another, إِلَّا الْمُتَّقِينَ, except those who are reverent, except those who are pious. In another verse, God tells us, وَيَوْمَ يَعَضُّ الظَّالِمُ عَلَىٰ يَدَيْهِ يَقُولُ يَا لَيْتَنِ اتَّخَذْتُ مَعَ الرَّسُولِ سَبِيلًا. And on that day, the wrongdoer will bite on his hand. This is, you know, a sort of an allegory for regret. He will bite on his hand and he will say, had I accompanied the Prophet's way, the right way, the good way. Ya waylata, laytani lam attakhidh fulanan khalila. Woe unto me, had I not taken so and so as a friend. Why? Because he deceived me. He or she took me to the wrong path. They manipulated me. They misguided me. And as a result, I now stand in regret. I made the wrong choice of letting someone into my life who was not helpful, but in fact was harmful to me. And thus, we find that our teachings, they emphasize on the importance of friendship, brothers and sisters. Tonight, I'd like to very briefly mention three principles that I think are important for us to consider, young and old, men and women, when it comes to either choosing friends or evaluating our friendships. Because it's not just a one-time thing. You don't just find someone and you become friends and that's it, khalas. Goes through a process of evaluation. We have to evaluate our relationships. We have to evaluate our interactions and so on and so forth. It's a lifelong process. And so these three principles, I think, are very important. Number one is not to have too many friends. Now, for some of us, this might sound odd because we are accustomed to living in a world that encourages greater social networks, to go and network either with professionals and make sure that you get to know everyone and everyone gets to know you so that you can continue to do well and progress, right? When it comes to Facebook, we know that the more, the merrier. To continue, I mean, Facebook gives you suggestions and recommendations constantly, over and over and over. No matter how many friends you suggest, there's still more people to add, right? To grow your network of quote-unquote friends. And so this might sound odd to many of us. Isn't life all about maintaining relationships with everyone around us and growing our relationships? Yes and no. To a certain degree, yes. But also to a certain degree, no. Because what is important is that we are able to maintain a key inner circle of friends. An inner circle of friends who are close, who are our go-to people, who are always there, who are completely honest with us, who are not just our cheerleaders. Sometimes there may be people who we consider to be friends who are our cheerleaders. Whatever we do, no matter what we do, big, small, good, bad, it doesn't matter, they always cheer you on. Yes, we support you, we support you. Support is important, but only in the right way. It's not good for us to surround ourselves by people who will support us no matter what. That's a problematic sort of way of thinking about things. Our fifth Imam, Imam Muhammad al-Baqir alayhi salam, he says, اتَّبِعْ مَنْ يُبْكِيكَ وَهُوَ لَكَ نَاصِحْ وَلَا تَتَّبِعْ مَنْ يُضْحِكُكَ وَهُوَ لَكَ غَاشْ. He says, follow, acquaint yourself, surround yourself, be close to the one who will give you honest advice, even if it makes you sad and cry. Even if that advice makes you sad, it might bring you stress, it might make you weep, it might make you cry, it might make you depressed. Follow such a person rather than following the one who will deceive you but always bring you joy. They'll make you laugh, they'll make you enjoy your time, but they may deceive you. They may not be completely honest with you. They may not show integrity towards you. Al-Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salam, he tells us that the best of my friends is the one who guides me, who provides for me honest advice. This is a powerful statement by our sixth Imam, reminding us that the best of people is the one who can be honest to you, who even when it comes to your faults, they are honest with you because they care for you. They want to ensure the best for you. They want you to succeed. They're not just cheering you on no matter what you're doing. They want to ensure that you're safe, that you're happy, that you're doing well. And this is why we find that the prophets and the imams and the righteous people, they, in many cases, they had small, intimate groups of friends. Yes, the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him, and his family, he had many companions, many people who he knew, and many people who knew him. But when we go back to history and we look, we find that there was only a very small group of key inner circle friends that he truly relied upon, that he allowed completely into his life, that were trustworthy, that were honest, that were good, a small number of people. Imam Hussein alayhi salam, on the day of Ashura, he stands with how many people? Less than 100 people, including his family members. These individuals, they were the closest to him. Many people, he received thousands and thousands of letters telling him what? We are your friends, we are supporters, we like you, we want you. But what happened? They turned their backs against him. And so we find that the prophets and the imams, they all had small groups of friends, people who they could depend on, people who they could trust, people who were honest, people who had integrity. So this is number one. That is, to focus on quality over quantity. Even if we only have a handful of friends, couple of friends, but those friends are honest, they are trustworthy, we can rely on them, they are dependent, this is better than having many friends who are not. This is number one. The second principle is that we should try to spend our time with those who are wise and worthy of our time. We have to ensure that the standards that we have, if we have high standards, that we maintain those standards, that we do not come down just to maintain acquaintances and to say that we have more friends. That we expect others to rise to our standards, not for us to go down to theirs. And this is important when it comes to looking for those who are wise, looking for those who are worthy of our time and our energy and our efforts. And thus we find that our teachings, they emphasize the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam, sallu ala Muhammadin wa alihi. He says, spend time with the person who reminds you of God. When you see them, you are reminded of God. When you spend time with them, you are reminded of your responsibility. You are reminded of opportunities for goodness. So ask yourself, does this person, does he or she remind me of God? Does this person do the right thing even when it's very difficult and when it's hard. It's easy for us to do the right thing when it's easy, when the stakes are low. But as the stakes increase, it becomes more and more difficult to do the right thing. And that is the real test. The person that I consider to be my friend and the person that I bring into my life and share my life with, does this person do the right thing, and even when and especially when it's hard, it's not easy to do the right thing? This shows a sense of integrity and honesty. It shows a sense of loyalty to values. This shows us that the person is dependent, that one can be dependent on this person. The person is dependable. Does this person inspire others? Sometimes we find people who are constantly complaining. Constantly. You sit down with them, you want to have a conversation with them, and all they do is complain. And they are pessimistic. They have no optimism. They do not instill inspiration in others. Does this person inspire others? Does this person uplift others, helps them overcome problems and challenges and issues that they face? This is an important quality for a friend to have, that they are optimistic, that they are inspirational, they can inspire. And they don't have to be, you know, a world-renowned inspirational speaker or anything. No, no, no. But someone who is optimistic. Someone who, when he or she sees that you're facing difficulties, they can just give you a little lift, a little boost, a little bit of hope. Does this person inspire others? And does this person stay close, and especially in tough times? Many times we have friends, so-called friends, who we spend a lot of time with. It's great to spend time with them, and especially when things are easy. When you have a good job, when you have an income, when your relationship, your family relationship is good, when you know you're able to do all things, when you can invite them over and cook beautiful meals for them, right? When you can share joyous occasions with them. But as soon as the going gets tough, as soon as you find that you are facing a certain difficulty, a financial difficulty, a social difficulty, a challenge, you find that, khalas, they disappear. You can't find them. You may call them, you might try to get in touch with them, to try to reach them, and that's it. They've disappeared, they've gone. They are only there for opportunity. They are opportunists. They are your friend as long as you have money. They are your friend as long as, you know, they can take advantage of something that you have. But when situations are tough, they turn away from you. And this is very important. We have to ask ourselves, those who we consider to be friends, can we depend on them at all times? Do they stick with us when it comes to our tough situations and challenges in life? This is number two. And number three is that we often talk about finding good friends. People who have certain qualities. They are honest, they are dependable, they are trustworthy, and so on and so forth. The third principle is that we have to be good friends. We can't just expect to find people that are good to us, but that we have to also be good to others. If I want a good friend, I have to be a good friend too. I have to stick with the person in good times and in difficult times. I have to be loyal too. I have to be dependable too. I have to be honest too. I can't expect only others to care for me and take care of me and ensure my safety, and I do not reciprocate. We should try to be the type of friend that we want to have around us. And that we should treat others in the way that we want to be treated. If I want someone to treat me with kindness, I should be kind to others. If I want someone to respect me, I should respect others. if I want someone who is forgiving, who is merciful, who shows kindness, compassion, mercy towards me, I should show mercy to others. I should show compassion to others. I should be patient with others. I cannot expect others to do so with me, but that I do not express these things as well. And that one of the important aspects of being a good friend to others is, as I mentioned before, is that we encourage when the person is on the right path, when they're doing good, and we remind them. We give them advice, honest advice, that comes from the heart. If, God forbid, they are not on the right path, if they're making mistakes, not to encourage them, God forbid, when they're engaged in immoral and or indecent behavior. If someone I consider myself to be a friend to and close to, this person is engaging in gossip, in ghiba, for instance, I should not encourage them. Sometimes we encourage others. Someone makes a mistake, they begin to talk bad about a person, and we encourage them. We add fuel to the fire. So tell me, what else did he or she do? Tell me, what is his name? What is her name? And we add fuel to the fire. We encourage this person to continue speaking poor about others or deceiving others. They may tell us of something that they did, a trick they did to make more money, and we tell them, oh, you know what? I have a better idea for you next time. Huh? Don't encourage people if they're doing something wrong. Give them advice. Give them honest advice. The Quran tells us that even those who are closest to us, that if they encourage us and they request of us to do something wrong, that we should not listen to them. The Quran gives us the example of our parents. Our parents who are held in high respect in the Quran. We have memorized the verses, we have heard the verses, the traditions about the role of parents in our lives and the importance of expressing obedience to them and honoring them, to obey them, to listen to them. Yet the Quran says, وَإِن جَاهَدَاكَ عَلَىٰ أَن تُشْرِكَ بِي مَا لَيْسَ لَكَ بِهِ عِلْمٍ فَلَا تُطِعْهُمَا. And if your parents, those who are closest to you, they encourage you to engage in something immoral, to take partners, according to this verse, to take partners with God, or to do anything immoral or indecent or that which displeases God, فَلَا تُطِعْهُمَا. Do not obey them. Don't listen to them. But what? وَصَاحِبْهُمَا فِي الدُّنْيَا مَعْرُوفًا. Show kindness to them, honor them, but do not obey them. Because they are asking you to do something that goes against what God has commanded you to do. And so a good friend is one who is good to others. Not only expects others to be good, but is also good to others. Imam Hussein alayhi salam had the best of friends. He says, I have no one had companions like my companions. Those who stood with him, men, women, young, old, who were ready to give everything they had, and they did. They were not only ready, but they did. They actually gave everything they had to stand alongside Imam Hussein alayhi salam, to be a good friend, to be good friends to Imam Hussein alayhi salam. We read that on the eve of Ashura, the Imam turns to his companions and he tells them, listen, this army, their business is with me. And there is nothing that is expected from you. And so you are free. I will not hold you accountable. I will not hold you accountable. You are free to leave. Go back. Go back to your cities. Go back to your homes. Go back to your families. And these companions, they showed their loyalty. They told him, Ya Aba Abdullah, how can we leave you? What are you asking us to do? This goes against every value that we have. Our loyalty, our faith. It goes against everything for us to desert you and to leave you and not to sacrifice everything that we have for your cause. And so they remain. And on the day of Ashura, one by one. And they are the first to stand. Imam Hussein had many family members, his sons, his brothers, his cousins, other family members. These are Bani Hashim. These are Bani Hashim. They grew up in the home of Ali ibn Abi Talib. They learned courage and strength from Ali ibn Abi Talib, and before him the Holy Prophet and the rest of Banu Hashim. But these companions, their faith would not allow them to allow the family of the Prophet to go before them. And thus they stand one by one. And they give everything that they have. From the young child who comes to Imam Hussein and he tells him, "My master, I come to you and I want to sacrifice my life for your cause." Imam Hussein tells him, "But your father already died." He already did so. And he tells him, "I want to go in the footsteps of my father as well. I want to sacrifice my life for you." All the way to the old man, Habib ibn Mazahir. From the free to the slave. Man and woman, they all show their loyalty and their honesty and their integrity to Imam Hussein. And this is why, brothers and sisters, today, millions of those who have the love of Imam Hussein in their hearts and the love of the companions of Imam Hussein, they walk towards Karbala to pay their respects, to honor not just Imam Hussein, not just his brother Abul Fadl al-Abbas, but also to the Shuhada of Karbala. They stand there and they pay their respects to the Shuhada. Because we recognize the importance of this loyalty and friendship that they had to Imam Hussein. The family of Imam Hussein, his son Ali ibn al-Hussein, Zainul Abidin, alayhi salam, his sisters, Sayyida Zainab, his daughters, the women and the children, after that long and arduous journey from Karbala to Kufa to Damascus, they make their way back home to the city of Medina, to the city of their grandfather, Rasulullah. But Medina is not the same Medina. It is not the same city. It has now become unrecognizable. Because the best of the best, the cream of the crop, had left this city and they are no longer returning. They are no longer coming back. And so tradition tells us that on the way, Al-Imam Zainul Abidin, he asks one of those who is with him by the name of Bishr, his messenger. He tells him, "Oh Bishr, go forth, precede us, go forth to the city of Medina and give them the news of the killing, of the murder of my father, Abi Abdullah al-Hussein." And so Bishr, he climbs onto his horse and he proceeds towards the city of Medina. He says, "I entered into the city and I went straight to the mosque of the Holy Prophet and I stood by the gravesite of the Holy Prophet. And I began to announce, I began to call out." He said, "Ya ahla Yathrib la muqam lakum biha. Qutila al-Husayn fa adma'i midraruhu. Al-jismu minhu bi Karbala mudarrajun. والرأس منه على القناة يدار. He comes in, he announces, he says, O people of Medina, O residents of Medina, I have come to you of the news of the murder of our master, Abi Abdullah al-Hussein. His body has been dismembered and left in the land of Karbala, and his head was raised up on the lances. The people, they began to gather around Bishr, and they began to weep and mourn. After a few moments, as they are gathered around this messenger, Bishr, a lady, she walks up, she cuts through the lines, she approaches Bishr, she tells him, Oh man, I want you to tell me, give me the news of my beloved son. My beloved, tell me the news of him. He turns to her, he says, Oh lady, who are you? She says, I am Fatima, Ummul Baneen. He begins to weep, he cries when he knows who she is. He turns to her, he says, My mistress, Oh Ummul Baneen, I offer my condolences to you on the death of your son Ja'far. She tells him, Oh Bishr, I did not ask you about my son Ja'far. He turns to her, he says, My condolences on the passing of your son Abdullah. She tells him, Oh Bishr, I did not ask you about Abdullah. He tells her, Oh Ummul Baneen, my condolences on the death of Uthman. She tells her, Oh Bishr, I did not ask you about Uthman. He then turns to her and he says, عظم الله لك الأجر, my condolences to you on the murder of Abi al-Fadl al-Abbas. At this moment, when Ummul Baneen hears the name of Abbas, she breaks down, she begins to weep, but then she stops, she turns to him, she tells him, Bishr, I did not ask you about Abbas, tell me about my beloved Habibi Aba Abdullah. He turns to her, he says, عظم الله لك الأجر, my condolences to you on the murder of Abi Abdullah al-Hussein. Inna lillah wa inna ilayhi raji'un. Wa sa'lamu alladhina zalamu ala Muhammadin ayya munqalabin yanqalibun wal 'aqibatu lil muttaqin. صلى الله وسلم عليك يا سيدي ويا مولاي يا أبا عبد الله وعلى الأرواح التي حلت بفنائك عليكم مني جميعا سلام الله أبدا ما بقيت وبقي الليل والنهار ولا جعله الله آخر العهد مني لزيارتكم السلام على الحسين وعلى علي بن الحسين وعلى أولاد الحسين على أصحاب الحسين السلام عليكم جميعا ورحمة الله وبركاته. And for the soul of those who have passed away, our respected brothers and sisters, we will be reciting for them Surah Al-Fatiha. But before we do so, just to remind you once again, brothers and sisters, next week inshallah, on Monday, Tuesday and Wednesday, November 5th, 6th and 7th, we will be holding the commemoration of the legacies of our Holy Prophet, peace be upon him and his family, Al-Imam Al-Hasan alayhi salam and Al-Imam Al-Ruda alayhi salam. And the program begins at 7 p.m. inshallah with prayers. وَإِلَىٰ أَرْوَاحِ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ